You're listening to the Family Life Hub with your hosts, Lee and Brandy.
This is your source for all things parenting. Join us as we discuss the hardships and the joys of raising kids.
We want to inspire you to inspire your children.
No topic is taboo.
Because adulting is hard, and you shouldn't have to adult alone.
Hey, welcome back to the Family Life Hub. I'm Brandy.
And I'm Lee.
And we have a special guest today.
Yay, another guest.
What? Special guest.
You're our special guest.
Wow.
So sitting with us today is Paul Watson. He's the senior pastor over at Downtown Vineyard Church, a.k.a. our boss.
Boss man.
Dun, dun, dun.
Sorry, we gotta behave.
Well, we try. We try to behave in the midst of greatness.
Oh, great.
I'm sucking up now.
No, I'm in. You just, come on. I'll tell Nancy to give you a raise.
Woo! Yes, yeah, bonus man. Points.
I want a raise.
Hey, you're behind. Today, we're actually talking about Genesis 25 through Genesis 27.
Yeah. Now, this is going to be a really, really good discussion. And I think this is probably one of those right discussions that we need to have.
Yeah. So the conversation that we've been having, Lee and I, are kind of, as we were reading these passages, a couple things stuck out to us. And the first one was, kids have natural competition. Yeah. It's kind of a weird, you know, a deal that if you look at kids, it's natural. It's not something that we do. It just naturally happens. And, you know, it's the like, it's me first. Or, you know, I want that. No, I want that. And yeah. It's
totally natural. And there's one of the scriptures that comes to mind is out of Proverbs, which just simply says, a brother was made for adversity.
Oh, yeah.
A friend sticks closer than a brother. A brother was made for adversity. And you look up and you're like, yeah, that's true.
So
yeah.
Keep your friends close. And your brother's closer.
A brother was made for adversity.
Exactly.
Right? That's right.
So we really see this in Genesis 25 as well. So Jacob, we're talking about Jacob and
Esau.
I like to say Esau. It's wrong. Don't say it.
Esau
you'll get
sounds
made fun
like
of.
Some sort of foreign animal.
Yeah, well, it sounds pretty.
Costa Rica.
So we're talking about Jacob and Esau. And Jacob comes in from the field and, Esau comes in from the field. Yep. And Jacob has this big pot of stew and it's steaming on the stove and you can probably smell it a mile away. And Esau comes in and he's like, give me some of that stew. I'm starving. And Jacob says, give me your birthright.
Yeah.
And this was so funny to me because Esau literally says, I'm dying.
I'm so dramatic.
So you don't really think of Bible stories as being like super dramatic or like the characters in the Bible of being like how we are today or how our kids behave. Cause we know we never behaved like
never,
that.
Never.
But we definitely see it in Genesis 25.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid and I was going on an Easter egg hunt with my family and my cousin was there and that's who I grew up with. She was like a sister to me. And we were out and we were doing Easter egg hunting and as most of you guys know, I'm extremely competitive. So I went through and I was trying to grab all the Easter eggs and I'm running around and suddenly I turn around and my cousin, she's standing in the middle of the yard and she's just crying.
He's getting all the eggs.
And you said, of course
I
am.
Eggs.
And I said, yes, Stephanie, because I'm a winner. And I was like, she said, I want eggs too. And I said, well, if you want eggs, you got to earn them. So she came over and she kicked me in the leg and stole like two or three eggs.
She earned them.
That sounds about normal. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's really how cousins work and how brothers work and how sisters work. And I mean, that whole competitive nature is just kind of natural amongst siblings.
But here's my question.
Yeah.
So it's natural. We know that. But what's the parents' role in that? Parents.
That's a phenomenal question, right?
Yeah. Because if you look at the story that we're talking about of Genesis, you look at what Rebecca did,
yeah.
and she really pitted her sons against each other.
Yeah. I don't know. Every time I read this story, I think of Rebecca and I think of like the evil Disney queens, right? Just sitting there twiddling their thumbs, just plotting and scheming. Oh yes, my favorite son. He is going to get the heir. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you have this scenario, and so there really is this question. There really is this thing: do parents? If I hear what you're asking, what you might be asking is that: do parents play a role in sibling rivalry?
Yeah. Exactly.
Do they support that? Are they part of the instigation that comes along with that?
I think that kids naturally have sibling rivalry, and I think that that whether parents mean to or don't mean to, I think kids interpret parents' actions and they interpret them to, and I totally know that there's parents out there that totally have favorites. I mean, there's totally out there, and sometimes it's a obvious deal.
Like Rebecca.
And sometimes it's just the way that children interpret parents' actions.
Yeah.
Mom loves you more than me. Dad loves you more than me. Well, why? Because you got a car when you were 16, and I didn't get a car till I was 17. But what, you know, I can think of my kids as scenarios that Brian actually got a car when he was 16, and Brittany got a car when she was right before she turned 17. But the whole difference for us was our finances.
Yeah. Mm.
That we had sold a piece of property and had some extra money, not a lot of money, but had some extra money when right as Brian turned 16, and we were able to buy his car before his birthday. And Brittany, who's younger, we had to come along after that, and we had to save the money to buy her a car, and it took us longer to do that. Well, how does that get interpreted?
I'll never forget. I'm the oldest kid by 4 years, right? And my sister's birthday came around, and my sister got a bike with the gears.
Yes.
It was a gear bike. And I was just distraught because she's 4 years younger than me and got a bike with gears. And I didn't have one. So I definitely thought that she was the favorite kid at that point.
Yeah. So sometimes it's kids how they interpret stuff. But in this particular passage, it literally is Rebecca shows favoritism to Jacob, but which also tells you that Isaac shows favoritism to Esau.
Right, exactly. Because Esau was the older brother.
Yeah.
And
remember, Esau's a hunter-gatherer, and so there's this thing that Esau's a man's man.
He's like Gaston.
Yeah, he's like Gaston. I'll totally give you that. And then you have Jacob, and Jacob is a... He makes stew.
He's the sidekick.
He makes stew. He's a cook. Where do you think he learned that? He learned cooking and his skills from his mom.
Yeah.
And Jacob learned his skill, or Esau learned his skills from his dad. And so that just tells you that in the story that Esau spent more time with his dad and Jacob spent more time with his mother, and those relationships were built from there.
Yeah.
And sometimes, it seems like, to the kid, it seems like favoritism, right? And we can see in this story, in this passage, that there was obviously favoritism. But, I mean, and as we go along in our lives, I can see where there's times when I actually just relate more with one of my kids versus one of my other kids. Some of my kids...
Personality-wise.
Right. Yeah. And so sometimes to them, it seems like favoritism. And you really, as a parent, have to, you know, sit them down and look, I love you all the same, but the reason I'm doing this with Zoe and not Peyton and Kylie is because Zoe likes it. Zoe gets it. Zoe wants to hang out with me and do this stuff.
Yeah, well, we tend to, just like anybody else, we tend to lean toward those relationships that come most natural.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it's our children. But obviously that creates issues.
Well, and that I think that's a really good point too, is that there are relationships within our families that come more natural to us, and those are easy to pour into. But because, you know, if you have multiple children in your household, you really have to work hard and be intentional about the relationships you're building. So there isn't favoritism there.
Yeah, no. Because
even if you're not intentional, I mean, even if you don't mean to have a favorite, that's kind of what develops.
Yeah, I hope I'm not jumping ahead of you, mm-hmm. but it can damage people.
Exactly.
That's the issue, right?
I think, yeah, that's the bottom line here.
The bottom line is that it can totally damage people. It can totally damage children. It can totally damage relationships. When one sibling feels like they're an outcast in their own family, or when one sibling feels like one parent loves the other parent more, the mm-hmm. amount of damage that it can do, and it can last a long, long, long time.
Yeah. You look at the Genesis 27 when, you know, Jacob literally stole his brother's blessing.
Yeah.
And how long did it take for them to reconcile that relationship?
They say it was 13 years.
I think it was longer than that.
That was Joseph. Joseph, his relationship was 13 years. But Jacob left and went into, another country and then married
a bunch of women.
The sisters.
The sisters, yeah. Leah and Rachel. And and when that happens, 14 years later, he comes back, and it's 14 years,
okay.
But Esau comes to meet him. He thinks Esau is coming to kill him.
Yeah.
And so he puts all of his, even his wives that he loves and all of his children out to be killed first, and then he's going to stand back.
That is a hero.
Because he's a man's man, because he is not Gaston.
Women and children first.
Women and children first. And Esau's literally coming to greet him. But then he says, why don't you come live in my land? And Jacob says, sure, that sounds great. And then goes and lives in a different land. He's literally 60 miles away from that land, because he's still afraid of him.
Yeah.
I don't know that they ever reconciled.
Yeah.
Not fully. There was always a division there. And there was always a wound there. Yeah.
Well, and another question I kind of had for parents is, you know, you see the brothers competing for the blessing of the inheritance and the blessing from their parents. And so parents, you know, is this happening in our own homes?
Yeah.
Where we have kids competing for our blessings, the attaboy, the you did good, the, you know, time spent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Love language.
Yeah.
And knowing what your love language is so important. But the other pieces in this story that is such an awkward piece is that in that piece, in their culture, they only had one blessing to give.
Yeah, that's true.
And it always went to the oldest.
It always went to the oldest son. And so he was supposed to get the birthright, and then he was supposed to get the blessing, the father's blessing. And the father only had one blessing to give. And I just personally have seen that when parents hold back blessings, mm-hmm. they damage kids.
Mm-hmm.
They hold back blessings, or they even start comparing their kids. Why can't you act more like this? Or why can't you clean your room like this?
Why can't you be like your brother? Why can't you? Yeah.
I was the youngest of five. I think privately you know that and joke about that. Mm-hmm. And
we do it publicly too.
Yeah. I was the youngest of five, and I was a sports kid. And my dad was, I mean, like my other brothers weren't. And so I was super competitive. I was a super sports kid. I was that kind of thing.
You?
And so it really, really affected my brothers in their relationship with me and with my dad. It was a hurtful thing, not a helpful thing.
Well, and it seems like it's kind of a pattern, mm-hmm. Especially within this family. Because if you look later on, you know, Joseph... Yeah. All of his brothers were jealous of him. And who was Joseph the son of?
Yeah.
Jacob.
Jacob.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a generational thing.
Jacob does the exact same thing.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
That's so messed up.
It's the exact same thing.
So, I think it's important for us parents to, even if we grew up with that, to to recognize that and learn how to break that generational chain that's going on in our lives.
Yeah.
You know, because if we're supposed to be calling ourselves Christians, we're supposed to be following God and listening to what Jesus said, then we should definitely be trying harder than our parents did to show the value and the individual love to each kid that we have.
Yeah, it's very powerful.
Well, and I think that kind of brings us to what the meat is today, which is, you know, something that I've learned from Paul, and I think, Lee, that you've gathered this from him as well, and being on staff at the church.
She's sucking up again.
I don't do it very often, but
I show favoritism. But I do show favoritism.
Great, Brady just got my blessing.
Yes. Anyways, the lesson that we've kind of learned by being on staff with you is that you should never treat anyone better than you treat your family.
Yeah.
And if that was the case in all of these stories for Jacob and Esau and Joseph and this generation of people, if that was their core, their relationships were holy, which is something we talk about a lot, then this would have never been the story that we're reading today.
Yeah, and that rule is real personal for me, and it's a rule that I try to live by. It's a rule that I teach all the time: never treat anybody better than you treat your own family.
Mm-hmm.
And really, where that comes from, though, is this: it comes from brokenness. Mm-hmm. That the reason I teach that rule so much, and the reason that people hear me say it all the time, I say it all the time. You know, we have five values in our church. Our third value is relationships are holy. God loves everyone. Yeah. Spiritual, not religious, mm-hmm. and then relationships are holy. But personally, I have this private rule that I go around and tell people, and that's never treat anybody better than you treat your own family. And that comes from a time in my life when I didn't treat my family well. And that I grew up with a very, very, I was probably, you know, I don't even like to talk about it, but it probably was, my dad probably showed a lot of favoritism to me.
Mm-hmm.
I came from a very difficult home. In some aspects and other aspects, I felt very loved. As a dad, I grew up kind of with the idea that, you know, kids were to be seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm.
And they were supposed to do what I say because I'm the daddy.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't necessarily treat my kids well. I treated other people well. Why? Because you want people to like you.
Right.
Right? And then I treated my wife well. LeMay and I have an amazing relationship. We've been married 30 years. And
congrats.
Amazing
this year.
This year. And amazing relationship. But I can't say that I had a good relationship with my children.
Hmm.
I was a hard father. I fathered my children like my father fathered me.
Yeah.
And when Brittany was about 12, we end up in family counseling. And come to find out that my kids don't like me.
That's hard to hear.
Yeah, they don't like me. Of course, you'd say they love you.
Right.
Right.
But they don't like me.
Those are two different things.
Yeah, they don't like me. They were in family counseling. I'm Pastor Paul. But I was such a jerk at home. And we end up in family counseling. And it was there. I had to go to both of my kids. And I had to ask for forgiveness. And then we created a rule in our home, and the rule is never treat anybody better than you treat your own children or your own family. Oh. And I just decided that, it's amazing that we'll be nice to strangers and we won't be nice to our own spouse.
And we're more forgiving to strangers than we are to our families.
Oh, we give so much more grace to others.
And it's it's horrible.
It's horrible.
I mean, realistically, it's a horrible thing.
It's a bad practice.
We get trapped into.
And the reason why is because we have this belief system that runs behind it. There's you always got to figure out what's running behind the script. What's causing you to do that? Well, because we want people to like us, and we know that our family loves us, and we know that our family will forgive us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we treat our family worse than we treat strangers. Because ultimately, hey, we all love each other. It's all going to be fine, except for it's not fine.
Yeah.
We're family.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not fine. And pretty soon, they grow up and they don't even call you. And they grow up and they don't want to live by you. Or they grow up and they don't show up for Christmas anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is is you have years of bad behavior. And if you don't do something about it, that bad behavior leads to broken relationships. And so I started working incredibly hard. And you guys know my family.
Mm-hmm.
We are unbelievably close.
Yeah.
That my children know that I love them beyond, that's our rule, and it runs deep in our family. And we probably have, and I don't say this because it's my family, we probably have one of the closest families I know of.
Yeah. You guys do have a really great family. Absolutely.
Yeah. They're very, very tight knit. Yeah. Both of my kids bought houses downtown so they could live close to us. We eat together a couple times a week. They're both grown. My daughter's 27, my son's 30, and that rule runs deep in our family.
Yeah,
but it took a lot of work to get there.
Unbelievable amount of work. By the time my kids were, Brian would have been 15 at that time, and Brittany would have been 12. I had done. Because they were little, I had lived with this idea of, well, one of these days, it'll all work out. But by that time, I had already done so much damage, right?
Mm.
I had already done so much damage, and I didn't know that I was doing damage.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I didn't know that I was doing damage. As a matter of fact, from the outset, if you would have looked at our family at that point in time, you would have thought we had an amazing family.
Mm.
And it was just those hairline fractures that you don't see. And the reason you don't see them is because they're little.
Yeah, all the little things add up.
Well, your children are little. And so your children can't really articulate how they're feeling.
Right.
They can't really defend themselves. They can't really say how they feel. They're children.
Yeah.
They can't figure out how to put that emotion into words.
Yeah, but put yourself in a family counselor's office and they are articulate.
They got no problem saying what's going on.
They are, well, you have somebody who knows how to ask the right questions, and when they ask the right questions, they get the true answers.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Not the right answers.
They get the true answers. I like that.
And so it was when we were confronted with the truth that we had to decide what type of family we wanted to have. And I always wanted my children to know that I loved them, because I grew up in a family that this is really hard for me to speak about, because I love my family, and my family all lives in the valley. But we grew up in kind of it was complicated.
Yeah.
It was complicated.
We forget as parents that our first mission in life is our kids and our home,
yeah.
And that's our first mission field.
Yeah.
And so if we're bombing that, we're probably bombing other places.
Yeah. Who cares if the guys at the office like you? Honest to God. And I really hope that we have a great relationship. We all work together.
Yeah.
And I really hope we have a great relationship. But you know what I really want? Is I want your kids to know that I want your kids to be loved like nobody else's kids are loved. I want your kids to come first in your life. I don't want you to spend all the time at the church.
Yeah.
I want you to be at home first. That's your first mission field. I want my family to know that they're loved. That's my first mission field. You know what I'm saying? And then if I get relationships out of the office, that's a bonus for me.
Right.
I get relationships with my neighbors, that's a bonus for me. But that's not my first priority.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, who's left?
Right.
You know, the guy at the office, that's a season.
Mm-hmm.
But your family, your kids, your legacy, that continues on. And we see that in Genesis through Jacob.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we just got to really make sure that we're intentional, right? That's what I always push in youth group, mm-hmm. is intentional relationships. And it has to start in your family. It has to start in your home to make sure that you are, you know, being as successful as you can in your first mission field, in your family.
And what's intentional look like? I mean, I've got things for me that are very intentional, but when you say intentional, what is that? What's intentionality look like in your home?
I think it's making space. You know, I've been having this conversation a lot with different parents and moms specifically about creating space. and creating space for each kid, creating time, because we're all busy and that's always going to be a thing.
Yeah.
We can say, oh, we're so busy. And that is my go-to line. How are you? Oh, you know, just busy.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm busy. I have three kids. That's always going to be a thing. But being able to create that space to spend time together, to really get to know them.
Yeah.
What do they like? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you even know what your kids like?
Yeah.
Because it changes.
Mm-hmm. It changes fast.
As they grow. So if you're not creating time and creating space to build that relationship, to be interested in the things that they're interested in, mm-hmm. and just, you know, cultivating that, then you get broken relationships.
So the areas that I had to become intentional on is I had to be intentional in saying I'm sorry.
Because
they're my kids. Because so I grew up, you know, they're supposed to do what I say. And so when they didn't do what I say, I would be angry, or I'd get on them, or I'd, you know, my wife has a really good thing, which she'll say when we see somebody get angry, when we see somebody act ugly, is what we call it. She used to always say, well, you know why they do that. And say, well, no, why? And because that works for them.
Oh,
people always do
it's
what
effective.
People always do what works for them. So if you have a kid that always shouts and kicks their feet, well, why do they do that? Because it works for them.
Because it's effective. Yeah. Oh, that's a really good point.
If you have
she's a smart woman.
So anyway, so what worked for me was being angry.
Yeah.
So I had to start doing what worked for them. I had to start saying I'm sorry. I had to start saying I love you,
which is really hard.
Yeah. Hey, do you guys want to spend time together?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I had to find the areas that I had done the damage, and I had to reverse them, and I had to become intentional about not, you know, if the room was dirty, don't let that bother me. If they didn't do what I told them to do, don't let it go a little more.
Yeah.
And so that was the areas that I had to work on. So.
And I think it would be different for everybody. You know,
yeah,
everybody's got their own triggers. But, you know, this has been an awesome time. Paul, thank you so much for coming out. I really appreciate you stepping in on this and kind of explaining where treating your family better than you treat anybody else's work kind of comes from and why. And I just want to say thank you.
Yeah.
So this is awesome, right?
This is great.
This is good stuff. So anyway, good conversations.
All right. If you guys have any questions or if you want to reach out to us, you can go to Facebook. It's DTV Family Life Hub. Or you can hit us up on an email, family
at dtvchurch.org.
That's right. So anyways, we love you guys, and we'll talk to you all later.
Have a great week.
God bless.